Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If there wasn't a global pandemic going on, would Ricky Gervais ever have agreed to be on this podcast? We may never know. I'm Matt Wilstein from The Daily Beast, and on today's episode of The Last Laugh, I talk to the comedic mind behind The Office, Extras, and most recently, Afterlife. As Ricky tells me on this week's show from his home in London, he's been more available than ever during quarantine, mostly because he doesn't have to leave the house or put on actual pants. He just has to sit in his trophy-filled office and talk. And as always, he has a lot to say. Ricky and I get into all of the thorny issues he loves to talk about, including political correctness in comedy, and the Caitlyn Jenner jokes that almost got him canceled a few years back. All of these ideas are present in Afterlife, his surprisingly moving Netflix series that just got picked up for a third season. Ricky didn't set out to make a show about grief. He just wanted to tell a story about a guy who stopped caring about what people thought of him. He ended up with the character of Tony, who starts saying whatever he wants to complete strangers after his wife dies of cancer.
Come here, good girl.
Your dog should be on a lead.
What?
Dog should be on a lead. Can't you read? The park's for everyone.
Oh, right. Oh, sorry. Thank you.
Come here, girl. Come here.
What? He is not a fat, hairy, nosy cocksucker. Bad girl, Brandy. Sorry about that.
Disgusting.
See you later.
That is just the tip of the iceberg. Before we get to our conversation, if you're enjoying this show, please let us know by leaving a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. If you have ideas for guests you want to hear in the show or questions you want me to ask comedians, they just might end up in a future episode. You can also go to ratethispodcast.com/laugh to rate this podcast wherever you listen. Now, let's hear me and Ricky Gervais.
Does that sound okay? Hold on. I might get sound a bit closer. There, if I project, and it's not too echoey either, is it? That's all right.
No, it sounds pretty good. How's it going?
Yeah, good, thanks. How are you?
I'm good. How's your day been? I feel like you're ending your day while I'm starting my day in Los Angeles. So.
Oh, of course. Yeah. yeah, it's been good. Been a nice day. We've gone for our long walk. I have a little job. Played badminton. Mm-hmm. Potted around. Did a bit of work. The work was about 28 minutes worth of actual writing.
Yeah. Are you finding it hard to be productive during this time?
Well, I'm not finding it hard to be as productive as I usually am, mm-hmm. which is, you know, because I usually have more than one thing on the go and I never give myself scary deadlines. You know, so I know that I've got a year to write this. Mm-hmm. And if you work that out, you know, it's a couple of pages a day. And if I do a scene, if I sort of write a scene, mm-hmm. right, I think, well, that'd take me a day to film that. So I've done a day's work.
That's a good way to think about it.
Yeah.
You're working on season 3 of Afterlife, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'd already had a few ideas and I wanted to do a third season. Mm-hmm. But as I said, I wasn't going to do an unwanted encore. I'm not going to do it for the sake of it, and I wouldn't want Netflix to do it just because it was, you know, I suppose paying for itself. I wanted it to be a demanded for encore, and it was apparently they called me end of week one and said
really?
Right. Yeah, we've got to do a third. They even said that's rare that they do that. Mm-hmm. They did it with the second season as well. So, I mean, that's how you know it's done okay, because they invite you to do it again. I also had to know that I could do a third, because you sort of put everything into, season one, in case that's it, in case I get hit by a bus. That could have ended there. And then you do season two and you burn bridges, to create the drama, you burn some bridges. So it's all, it sort of gets harder and harder. But trying harder makes it better too. So there's that. I sort of like that pressure that you've got. It's really weird because after season one, it went down really well. And some people, as a compliment on Twitter, were saying things like, why are you doing season two?
It was season that one. That was perfect. Just leave it alone.
And I think, well, that's very nice, but it is my job. You can't just say, okay, retire. Retire now.
Yeah, I mean, but a season three is very rare for you, right? I mean, you've always done basically two kind of short seasons of things. That's kind of what you're known for, starting with The Office, right?
I think the reason why I broke the rules this time, there's lots of reasons, but the one big reason is I haven't explored all the characters, and I've got more lead characters in this than any other show I've done. Usually there's one or two or three that you could call lead characters, and here there's about six or seven that could have their own spin-off that we've just seen bits of, I suppose I see it like a Tambury, like a grieving Springfield, where I can meet all these people and I can bring them back if I want. Or I really loved the world. I loved writing for that world. You can't run out of ideas when you're working for a local paper. It's almost like a soap opera with laughs, and tears.
Well, I have to tell you how much I love the show. I ended up binging the whole thing sort of during this quarantine time. And I think it's really oddly perfect for this moment that we're in. And I can't quite figure out why I feel that way. So I wanted to know if you feel that way and what you think is very fitting about it for right now.
I think people have been thinking about what really matters in life recently. They're calling their family more. They're worried about their family like they weren't 2 months ago. Mm-hmm. You know, it's always there, but it was an immediate threat.
Yeah, it's on the surface.
Also, it's everywhere. These things have happened before, but the reason why this is different, and I've never seen anything like it in my lifetime, is because it happened all around the world at the same time. And we're seeing it on TV. And usually you're seeing terrible things on TV and it's not in your back garden.
Right.
It's, oh, isn't that terrible? But it's not here. Mm-hmm. And now it is.
Yeah, it's very different.
Yeah. And so people, you walked past for the first few weeks. If you went for your walk and you walked past people, everyone was talking about it because they wanted to know. That was the worst thing. We didn't know. Can you get it twice? Can you get it from coffin? Can you get it from letters? Do I leave the letters on the... What does this event really kill it? Can you get it from your dog? Can you touch a dog and then give the doctor? You know, all these questions. We wanted, and now it's sort of settled down and we understand it a little bit better. There's still a certain aspect to, it turns people into kids where they're going, are we there yet? Are we there yet? Are we there yet? And so I think people... also, they wanted content, of course, because I think people are sick of watching TV shows made by Zoom. Right? The fact that we finished this and it was a lovely high production with dolly shots and lights, I think it's also refreshing to see something that isn't about the pandemic, because everyone knows it was filmed before the pandemic. So that's quite nice. There's no pressure. On the characters to be. It's funny though, because when I watch TV now, two people are hugging, I'm thinking, oh, keep apart. could be an old movie.
Yeah.
Someone's got to go, oh, he's going to catch it now.
Yeah. I was thinking when the mailman comes into your house to use your bath, that scene especially, I was like, oh no, this can't happen.
Yeah, exactly. Just wash your hands. I suppose series three, the first question would be, do they ever talk about the pandemic? Mm-hmm. Well, we don't know. We don't know if people be talking. I'm hoping that it's a distant memory.
So your instinct is to not make it part of the story.
I don't think so. I think there's going to be about 30 novels and bad movies and bad series about a pandemic. Like, I don't think we need another one. I might do a throwaway mention of the lockdown, you know. After the Second World War, a lot of the footage was shot in colour, actually. And they decolorized it so it seemed like a bygone era. So I think people can't wait to get back to normal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, what about, I was curious about your stand-up, though, because so you had to cancel your tour. You had a big tour planned, and I think you were supposed to shoot a special this year, right?
Yeah, well, I was halfway through. I think the week before shutdown, I played to 10,000 people in Stockholm. Mm-hmm. And I think the week after, I was meant to play to 13,000 people in Copenhagen. So those are... I was Chicago, Madison Square Garden this week, LA next month. I'm postponing them as I go along. Mm-hmm. So we're already, it should have ended in November and we're already into February of next year now, but we don't even know if it'll be back to normal then. And of course, my gigs will be the last to come back. They're going to open it up 100 seaters, 500 seaters. You know, an arena tour is going to be the last thing to come back.
So have you thought at all about how you want that to impact the special that you eventually put out?
Well, I've got to make a decision. Hopefully I'll get everyone who bought a ticket into another gig. And I'll have to rework it a little bit. Again, I'm not gonna do a special about coronavirus. Mm-hmm. But some things won't quite make sense. Yeah, if I'm talking about whatever, and people go, why hasn't he mentioned coronavirus? Because that's I think you do a mention early on, and because the show was up and running, it was getting really good. But it's not like starting again. I'll come back and I'll start back at 75% there, and with a few tweaks, it'll be a slightly different show, and just as good. Where do I film it? I don't know. There might come a time when I think, oh, listen, I'm never going to be able to film this in an arena. So I'll film in 100-seater and put it out on Netflix and then start again when, you just don't know. Mm-hmm. But the people get it. I've got a pretty good excuse. I've never cancelled a gig, but I think people know why. And I say that at the moment, everything's postponed and we've found a home for every gig that I've missed so far.
Mm-hmm. Going back to sort of the origins of Afterlife, why did you want to write a show that really centered on grief? Was it something that came from your own life, or that you?
It wasn't planned. It wasn't planned. It sort of happened and evolved, and it became an upshot and then a study later. So this is how it started. So I was on tour with Humanity. It was 2017, around about March, and I'd done a month of touring, and I felt guilty that I was only working for 70 minutes a day, so my days are free. I'm in hotels or whatever. I thought I should write another show. And I don't know why. I suppose in Humanity, I was talking about, the important things in life and free speech and all those sort of political correctness, all those things. And it all got jumbled up. And I thought, we can't say we can't say what we want. And sometimes that's for good reason, because we're culpable for the things we say and the consequences of those things. And we're worried about the consequences. So the reason why we don't go around saying exactly what we want to people is that we're worried what they think of us. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, but what, and I started thinking, I think, oh, well, what if you didn't care? What if you didn't care? That's because you've got to live through it tomorrow. But what if there wasn't tomorrow? What if you didn't care about dying? Or, you know, then you could say what you want. You didn't care about consequences. You could do anything. And I thought, well, why would that happen? Oh, I know, yeah. You were going to kill yourself, but you didn't for some reason. And then you think, oh, I've always got that to fall back on. Mm-hmm. So that was the sort of seed of the idea. That was the concept. Imagine if you didn't care about living, you could say anything.
Yeah, so it actually came from wanting to be able to, or wanting to show someone who could say anything versus starting with the grief. The grief almost came second.
Yeah, so then I thought, why would he want to kill himself? Oh, because he lost everything. Mm-hmm. And I thought, why? What's losing everything? Your soulmate, your life partner. You put everything into the relationship and you didn't want to live anymore without her. And that was the jumping off point. And I thought, wow, that's heavy, but I can still make it comedic. And why didn't he kill himself? The dog was hungry. And I thought, that's funny and poignant, I think. Mm-hmm. And that later became a thread that the dog saves his life metaphorically and literally. Mm-hmm. And that mundane things save your life, chores save your life, you know. Mm-hmm. You've got to do stuff.
Yeah.
So that was it. And then that's when I started thinking about what sort of person he was, because I didn't want him to just go around being a wisecracker, insulting anyone. So that would get wearing. Mm-hmm. And you wouldn't like him. You wouldn't like, but if you felt sorry, he's wounded. Oh, you know what he's doing. He's trying to make himself a psychopath so he won't feel anymore. Mm-hmm. Now we're with him. Now he's a bear with his paw in a trap and he's lashing out. But we want to save the, it's not his fault, you know. So I created this reason to like him. And if you know why someone's doing something and you feel sorry for them, it's almost you're with him. And the two reasons we laugh at that, even though it starts with a woman who knows she's dying of cancer. I mean, mm-hmm. that's not your average sitcom, right? but it comes from two places. One, the staple of a comedy and in particular sitcom is an ordinary person trying to do something they're not equipped to do. Mm-hmm. That's what we're laughing at, the blind spot. They want to do something, they can't do it, right? Everything from Bilko to David Brent. So that's one way. The other way you're laughing is that we're living vicariously through his candor. We're laughing when he says terrible things to a little 10-year-old kid because we thought that. Yeah. We thought that and no, we can't, because we know it's wrong, but it's funny when someone else does it, you know?
Yeah.
And it's sort of like justified violence in a way. We know it's wrong and we know vigilantism is wrong, but in a film we go, yeah, go on. Mm-hmm. Yeah, go on. I wish I could do that. So he's like a verbal vigilante. That was the whole concept. Are you Robbie?
Yeah.
Robbie, come here. Listen up, right? I'm an escaped lunatic. And I like murdering little fat kids like you. So if you hit George or anyone else, I'm going to come to your house. I know where you live. And while you're asleep, I'm going to smash your stupid head in with this hammer. Do you understand?
I am really interested in this, something that I think you talked about a little bit with when you were on with Seth Meyers, which is the evolution or the differences between David Brent, who's sort of the original character that we knew you as, and Tony, where they both say inappropriate things, but seemingly for totally different reasons, and they're very different people. So how do you view that differences between
it's
the
almost
two of them?
Like for opposite reasons. David Brent says things because he wants to be popular and loved. Mm-hmm. And Tony says things for the opposite. He wants to hurt people's feelings, get away. I want. But what they've got in common is that they both need a hug and they don't quite know that yet.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know?
Yeah.
David Brent thinks his life would be good if he was famous because he equates that with happiness.
Mm-hmm.
It's been sold a terrible bill there. It's just not true. As I say, Tony wants to punish the world.
Do you feel like there is both David Brent and Tony in you, or do you feel like you were more David Brent when you were younger
all the characters, all the characters in, you know, The Office and Afterlife are different ingredients of you. And if then, even if they're not, when you're writing fundamentally a character that doesn't agree with you on anything, you've got to make their argument as good as yours. Otherwise, it's just unfair. They're just foils. So I mix it up. You know, with every character, I agree with some of the things they do and say, and I don't agree with others. But that's life as well. I hate it when you just do... it's shorthand. It's a villain. You might as well do a little twirly moustache. And you think, well, he's never going to do anything good, right? He's the villain. And this perfect person's never going to do anything bad. That's what most heroes are in sort of, you know, fiction, is that they've never done a bad thing in their life, you know? And life's not like that.
Coming up, Ricky gets into his very strong feelings about political correctness in comedy and why he still stands by his jokes about Caitlyn Jenner at the Golden Globes.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This character that you have in the show, you know, says whatever he wants and speaks his mind. And I think for you've really been at the forefront of this debate over free speech and comedy and what you're allowed to talk about and what you're not allowed to talk about. And I think, you know, society has certainly shifted somewhat over the time that you've been doing comedy, right? How do you view that shift? And do you feel like you've evolved at all on those issues, or have you maintained?
Yeah, of course. You've got to think, I mean, the problem is you don't know whether you've evolved for better or worse, because you're trying to make people laugh. It shouldn't even be freedom of speech shouldn't even be a political issue. Mm-hmm. Everyone on any side should agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
That should be it's an academic issue. It's odd that it's become politicized, and it became tit for tat. Like, you know, the first wave of political correctness, people said, you can't say that. And people went, well, if I can't say that, then you can't do this. We go, well, that's not the point. You know, it started off with good intentions, but of course it gets mugged like anything good and used. And, it's very odd that, you know, political correctness or whatever, wokeness, as it's called now, it used to be the preserve of the sort of middle-aged Christian right.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's not. It's like, it's freedom of speech. It's really weird because if I do a tweet about freedom of speech, people go, oh, he's alt-right now. And I think, well, when did that happen? When did... No, Oh, right, were the ones that were closing down. Fascists were closing down free speech. Mm-hmm. Everyone's taken their turn. Left, right, centre. You know, fascists didn't want free speech. Communists didn't want free speech. Basically, people love the idea of free speech until they hear something they don't like. Mm-hmm. That's it. It becomes just selfish. It becomes, what you mean is, people try and justify it as well. They go, listen, I'm all for freedom of speech, but you know, that's the one thing you shouldn't joke about. Oh, you mean the one thing that you care about? I've seen it. I've seen it in my gigs. You know, mm-hmm. I do jokes about every awful atrocity in the world, and people laugh at 19 of them, and they don't laugh at the 20th because that happened to them, and yeah. That's human nature. But you've got to admit that. You know, mm-hmm. I talk about it in my humanity show where. I did a routine about food allergies on Jimmy Fallon. Mm-hmm. And I got this woman complaining, saying, oh, child, I've got a fatal food allergy. You should never joke about food allergies. And I ignored it for a while. And then I said, I make jokes about AIDS, famine, cancer, and the Holocaust. And you're telling me I shouldn't joke about food allergies. And she came back with, yes, but the Holocaust didn't kill children. So... And that's, again, that's a very usual trait, because people mm-hmm. go, because I've got it, it's the worst thing in the world. Mm-hmm. You don't, I know about this, and it's worse than everything else. Again, that's sort of like a very common trait now in society, that everyone thinks their thing is more important and worse than yours. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is, they see the irony in everything else. When I do a joke about famine, they know I don't mean it. Or cancer, they know I don't mean it. Or AIDS, they know I mean it. But when I do a joke about their thing, they go, well, he does, mine's misunderstood. He mm-hmm. might mean it with me, because they can't see the wood for the trees. Because it's an emotive reaction. And comedy is an intellectual pursuit. And it annoys me when people think that a joke is a window to the comedian's true soul. Nothing right. could be further from the truth. I'll flip a joke. I'll pretend to be something I'm not if it makes the joke better. Mm-hmm. I'll pretend to be right wing, left wing, no wing. It depends on the joke. And so you shouldn't be able to second guess. The comedian's true feelings and shouldn't come into a joke, because it's a magic trick, a joke. Mm-hmm. It should stand up by itself. Anyone should tell it, and it shouldn't matter who tells it. That joke should work.
That's what I thought was so funny about after the Golden Globes, this most recent one, when you kind of went after Hollywood, which is what you do at the Golden Globes. You got some praise on Fox News, people saying, oh, look, he's going after Hollywood. Isn't that great?
What's weird about that is it was actually the left on social media that once again said, oh, he's alt-right now. Mm-hmm. And even on Fox News, they said, well, no, Ricky's left-wing. Mm-hmm. We know he's left-wing. They said, he hates us. He hates Trump. Even the right was saying they know I'm left. Yeah. And like they didn't say it. So it's so odd. It's people pretend they don't like a joke, right? Mm-hmm. For some reason. But you know what? They just don't like the joke. Having the target that they defend. Mm-hmm. That's the bottom line. They can pretend, you know, they do a new one now. They don't go, oh, I'm not offended. I'm just bored, or it's lazy, or mm-hmm. anyone can just say that, or anyone can do. Well, no, you mean you just don't like the joke. You mm-hmm. liked it when I made the joke about the thing you don't like, but you didn't like it when I made the joke about the thing you do like. Just admit it.
Yeah.
I don't care if people like all the jokes, but don't pretend you've weighed it up and you're being the fair one. You just don't like that joke. And that's fine. That's fine.
I think for whatever reason, obviously you've made jokes about so many things over the course of your comedy. The Caitlyn Jenner stuff is the thing that I think got you in the most quote unquote trouble, you know, with people who are upset.
That's exactly right. Because most offense comes from people mistake the subject of a joke with the actual target. Mm-hmm. And they're not necessarily the same. I've had it throughout my career. So there, the he's making fun of a a trans person, therefore he's transphobic, which is very odd. That would suggest that you can never make fun of a trans person for any reason, even if it had nothing to do with their transness.
I've changed. Not as much as Bruce Jenner. What a year she's had. She became a role model for trans people everywhere, showing great bravery in breaking down barriers and destroying stereotypes. She didn't do a lot for women drivers.
It's so odd. It's such an odd thing to do. I remember there was one joke at the Golden Globes I did. I said the award for special effects should go for the team who airbrushed the poster for Sex in the City 2. Right?
Yeah.
And I said, we know how old you are, girls. I saw one of you in an episode of Bonanza. And Kim Cattrall said in an interview, that was ageist. Mm-hmm. And I pointed out, no, it's the opposite. I'm saying, why are we airbrushing? What's up with being 50? Why are we airbrushing women? Because it's nonsense. That the target was the fakery. That was the target of the joke. Hollywood fakery. And after this one, again, on Twitter, said, Ricky Gervais is right wing now. I went, what can be less right wing than going after the biggest, richest corporations in the world? When was that considered right wing? It's so odd. Again, they try and they don't like a joke, so they create their narrative, and they don't see how ridiculous they sound.
I did think it was interesting that you put a very kind of nuanced conversation about transgender people in Afterlife between your character and the photographer. Was that at all a comment or a reference to those controversies that you've dealt with?
No, I'd have done, you know, if you look at all the stories, I've done like, I don't know, 12 stories. Mm. They're all like that. It's just that people go, this one's a hot potato. Mm-hmm. It's like they've created a dogma around it. That should never be joked. But why shouldn't it be joked about? It depends on the joke. That's absurd. But I've seen it with so many issues. People saying, we want to be treated the same as everyone else, but not in jokes.
Yeah.
You know, and I want to go, well, no, that's asking for privilege. That's not asking for equality. Mm-hmm. If you joke about everything, you joke about everything. And there is a new dogma. You know, dogma used to be confined to religion and other cults. But now it's come into identity politics and everything. There's a dogma in everything. People want to shut you down. They put phobic on the end of a word. And what that means is shut up. Shut up. That's all that means. It's not just because someone accuses you of something. It doesn't mean that it's true. Mm-hmm. I see it all the time. Just lazy things. Racist. Well, no, that's not right. Sexist. No, it's not sexist. I'm talking about, they think that it means something. And what it means is they want you to shut up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what I want to do now before we get to the end here is go through a few of your credits that we didn't get to talk about from earlier in your career and see if there's a story or memory that kind of pops to mind. So we touched on The Office a little bit, but Extras is another just one of my favorite things that you've done. And I'm wondering, when you look back on that show, is there maybe one of the celebrity cameos or something that happened during that show that is really memorable for you?
I remember the first one that sprang to mind, obviously, is co-writing a song with David Bowie, who had been my hero forever. And I sent him the lyrics.
Mm-hmm.
I called him up and I said, did you get the lyrics? He went, yeah. I went, can you do something a bit retro, like Life on Mars? And he went, oh, yeah, I'll just knock off a quick fucking Life on Mars for you. That's how insulting. Now I've seen this opus, you know, one of the most amazing.
Yeah. just give it a little Life on Mars.
And I wanted to do another one for my little sitcom. He came through. That was quite a magical day. And then his assistant was there on the day, and she went, oh, we've got to think of a title for PRS. And we came up with Pug-Nosed Face.
Hi.
Hi, hi.
We were just saying that I'm an entertainer too.
Oh, yeah? What do you do?
I'm in a sitcom.
It's called When the Whistle Blows. Mm. Have you seen it?
I haven't, no. Is it any good?
No, it's shit.
Oh, just riffraff everywhere.
Not going down too well, huh?
It's getting 6 million viewers. So it, I mean, it's not exactly how I meant it to be, because the BBC have interfered and sort of chased ratings and made it lowest common denominator, sort of comedy, sort of catchphrases and wigs. And I think I've sold out, to be honest, but...
Yeah.
It's difficult, isn't it, when you... to keep your integrity when you're going for that first...
Little fat man who sold his soul.
The little...
Little fat man who sold his dream. Chubby little loser. Chubby little loser. National joke. No, not chubby little loser. No. Pathetic little fat man. No one's bloody laughing. The clown that no one laughs at. They all just wish he'd die.
And then, to return the favour for him being in Extras, which I think was his last acting role, he invited me to play Madison Square Garden, which I think was my first New York gig, to help him. It was the festival to raise money for the High Line. And he said, it's a charity gig and we sell tickets. And I went, okay. I went, and I thought of it would be like, you know, it's a charity gig. I was so naive. I just thought it'd be like all these posh people in sort of tuxedos, right? Of course, it's ordinary people buying tickets. And I said, have they seen my stuff? Can I just do my normal stuff? And he said, as long as it's wonderfully tasteless, which I thought was funny. Then as a surprise, he introduced me onto stage. He came out in a tuxedo and the crowd went mental because they didn't know he was going to be there. And he had a little harmonica and he just went, chubby little fat man. And he sang the song and they had the crowd see his pug nose face. and then he signed the harmonica and he gave it to me and I've still got it.
That's
so
great.
Yeah, that's easily one of the most magic moments from Extras.
I'd love to hear about your experience working on Curb Your Enthusiasm with Larry David, because I think there's some interesting parallels between your work and his, and sort of that wanting, being able to say whatever's on your mind, and almost, you know, between Tony and Larry
it
David.
It was really great. I've done two things like that. That was predominantly improv. Well, I did a Christopher Guest movie where he just does two takes and he just says, "Here, you're trying to get him to change the name of the film. Go, right." So that was it. And then Curb, but Curb was slightly different because it's a lot more procedural than that. Because obviously Larry wants to build up to something that he's got to do. So within the little arguments, there's tinier tram lines to get to somewhere he needs to get. Whereas Chris is freer, and then he finds the film. Even though he still writes a screenplay, Larry's is a bit more procedural. And obviously, the big difference was I was playing a twisted version of myself. But I remember it well as well. It was the hottest I've ever been in New York in the heat wave. It was 104.
Oh my God!
Some of the days, and I just thought, I'm melting. I'm melting. And he was laughing because we were both complaining.
Yeah.
It was me and him complaining in real life about everything. And then we'd make each other laugh.
Yeah. Must have been fun, though, despite the heat.
It was great. It was brilliant.
There was this this HBO special that you did that got some attention a couple years ago that was you, Chris Rock, Jerry Seinfeld, and Louis C.K., and I'm talking funny. And I don't know, I hadn't heard you talk at all about this, but when there was a clip that resurfaced that was all about the N-word and the debate over that. And how did you kind of feel when that got brought back up? It mostly concerned Louis C.K.,
You've got to make things bulletproof now for 10 years' time, which is nonsense, you know? I saw John Wayne got cancelled 40 years after his death last year because he wasn't woke enough in an interview for Playboy magazine. So, you know, there's that, right? The, you know, the one thing that came out of it, and we're, obviously we're discussing the word, as a, it's the difference between when we say you use the N-word. Well, we didn't use the N-word. That's like saying... saying hammer isn't using a hammer. It's we can discuss, we were discussing the word, right? Well, but the thing that came out of it was that on Twitter, Chris Rock got all the flack. He got all the hate because he allowed. And I was thinking, well, that's a bit harsh. of all the people in the room.
And then the last one that I just want to we touched on the Golden Globes, but obviously that's been a huge part of your comedy career as well at this point. You've done it, what, five times, hosting the Golden Globes. And what is there, I'm always kind of curious after these things happen, do you hear from the people that you made jokes about? Are there any interesting stories of people
I've never got any blowback. I've heard that so-and-so, or he didn't take it very well, or the look on his face, or that upset him, or, you know, and I never want to upset anyone. You know, I think people fall for the marketing a little bit, like, because I'm out there pretending to not care, and there's a poster with, you know, too hot to handle, and I go out there with a beer, he's drunk, he doesn't care. Well, you know, I've practiced those jokes in the mirror. I've made sure that, but they've been lawyered. I know I've never had a complaint upheld. They're not breaking any broadcast laws. How bad can they be? They're not libeling anyone. There's a, I mean, wow. It's also, it's not a room full of wounded soldiers. These are the most privileged people on the planet. I can tease them a bit about their public behavior, you know? So, like everything we've talked about with offense so far, in this interview alone, right? It comes down to this. 10 years ago, if someone said, oh, there's been a complaint, you'd go, what is it? You go, it's about this. And you go, you'd look into it. You'd go, what were they complaining about? I'd go, okay, maybe I could do, okay. Now, if someone says someone's complained, you go, what do you mean only what? I hope 1,000 people complained and I'm not going to look into it.
Yeah.
Because it means nothing anymore. It means nothing. Again, 10 years ago, if you wanted to complain about someone on TV, you got out a pen and paper and went, dear BBC, I'd like to, oh, I can't be bothered. Now you fire off a tweet and that tweet gets on the fucking news. It's crazy. It's just clickbait. It's shit. This headline that I hear on even reputable newspapers, they do it now. They say, so-and-so said a thing and people are furious. No, no one's furious. 0.0001% of people are furious, right? And they wouldn't even have heard about it if you hadn't even printed it. So it's bullshit. It's fake outrage. No one's outraged. No one's annoyed. No one cares. It goes away and comes back. If you ignore it, it's virtual. Just keep going. Just. I mean, really, it's not even worth worrying about.
Do you have a joke from the Golden Globes that's sort of your favorite or one that you are most proud of?
Well, one of the early ones, which one of the first ones I wrote when I found out I was introducing him, and it was very current at the time, was I like a drink as much as the next man, unless the next man is Mel Gibson.
That's a classic.
And then on this year's, I think one of my favorite was because of the time and because of the hysteria, the social media and the wokeness. I thought my favorite was we were going to have an in memoriam this year.
We were going to do an in memoriam this year, but when I saw the list of people that had died, it wasn't diverse enough. It just, no. It was mostly white people. And I thought, nah, not on my watch. So maybe next year. Let's see what happens.
So
that's great. This has been so fun. I heard somewhere you say that you were thinking about doing another podcast or bringing your podcast back. Is there any truth to that?
Well, I went from the the only person doing a podcast or the only person not doing a podcast.
Yeah, that was a good trick you pulled off.
Yeah, from one extreme to another. So, yeah, I think it would be nice. And it really suits my lifestyle, mm-hmm. just pottering around like this. So, I probably will. Mm-hmm. I think that's how I'll end up.
Yeah.
I think I'll end up in a little room.
Alone at home doing a podcast.
Exactly.
The way we end every episode is I ask comedians, who is another comedian who has made you laugh the hardest in your life? Could be someone that you've worked with on a set or backstage or on stage or anything.
Oh, in I thought the stand up. I thought Louis C.K. mm-hmm. at his peak was. I just thought, yeah. Well, that's yeah.
And that's not tainted for you now.
Well, I haven't seen his new stuff, mm-hmm. obviously. No, if I looked at his old routines, it's like it's odd, really, that you know people are not playing Smith's records anymore because he's gone a bit old. Right, I go, mm-hmm. not in the song he hasn't.
Yeah, that song still works.
That song is not touched by mm-hmm. anything. It's really odd. It's odd for me, you know. Oh God, Laurel and Hardy. I think my first, mm-hmm. when I just still see clips and I just still, just two grown men just being silly. Will Arnett, when I meet up with Will, he just mm-hmm. makes me laugh all the time.
Yeah.
Like he's a machine. He's a machine of wanting to make you laugh. I've always liked making people laugh, but I've never minded if someone else was making me laugh. As mm-hmm. long as I'm laughing,
yeah,
I laugh at the things I say or anyone else. I just like laughing.
Yeah, yeah. That's a great way to end. And thank you so much for doing this. I'm glad we got to do it from across the world. I feel like the pandemic like allowed this to happen in some way because you wouldn't have been here and I wouldn't have been there, but.
I think I've done more publicity for this than ever before because I don't have to get dressed. I don't have to go anywhere.
It's wonderful.
I just have to talk in my house.
Well, you're good at talking, so thank you.
Thank you very much. That was definitely a backside handed compliment.
No. All right. Great
cut
to
it down.
Great to talk
cut
to
it
you.
Down to a tight 6 minutes. Make me look articular and not too verbose.
Okay.
Thanks, man.
All right. Bye.
Cheers. See you later.
Okay, we didn't get it down to 6 minutes, but I want to thank Ricky Gervais again for being such a great talker on today's show. The first two seasons of Afterlife are streaming now on Netflix. If you haven't checked it out, it really is a perfect quarantine watch. If you like this show, please tell your friends and rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. You can find me on Twitter at Matt Wilstein and at thedailybeast.com. And if you're not already, please follow @LastLaughPod on Instagram, where you can catch a glimpse of Ricky's office, among other photos and videos from this show. The Last Laugh is distributed by Acast for The Daily Beast, with audio production by Red Rock Music. Our theme music is by Claude, who you can find on Instagram at claude.mp3. You can find this show every week on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. And as always, you can find show notes and highlights from each episode on thedailybeast.com. See you next week.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.